Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. While bars and clubs are closed across the country, DJs are finding ways to bring the party online, and sometimes for a good cause. DJ D-Nice's Club Quarantine on Instagram opens up the dance floor to anyone. Anyone can join the party, and sometimes you spot famous faces. J-Lo, Rihanna, Oprah, even Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders have been spotted getting down at parties. And sometimes those parties are fundraisers for various charities like Save the Music. Other DJs are spinning to help lift people's spirits, including Questlove and DJ Premier. Locally, hip-hop radio legends Stretch and Bobbito are co-hosting their own DJ sets every Thursday night on their respective Instagram live feeds. They last from 9:30 to late, so you can pour yourself a drink and have a good time dancing at a safe distance. We caught up with Stretch and Bobbito a couple months back when we held a listening party for the release of their debut album, No Requests, a collection of multidimensional dance tracks fusing jazz, Latin, instrumental hip-hop, disco, and the talents of their phenomenal M19 band. The duo first hit the airwaves in 1990, Fridays at 1 a.m. on Columbia University's campus radio station, WKCR. Throughout the 90s, their four-hour-long overnight shows were sensations, famous for introducing audiences to then-emerging artists like Nas, Biggie, Wu-Tang, and Jay-Z, not to mention the hilarious and awesome call-ins. To get a taste of what you might hear tonight on Insta, check out our conversation with Stretch and Bobbito.
Well, I was a student at Columbia, I would say a handful of months before matriculating, I had met Bobbito, who was working at Def Jam in various roles, doing A&R promotion, kind of a Swiss Army knife, doing whatever he felt needed to be done
accurate
at the label. and we became very fast friends over music and a shared sense of humor and just being two guys that grew up uptown in New York City roughly at the same time. Bob's a few years older than I am. And just by a twist of fate, after we had kind of fantasized about doing a radio show but didn't really do anything to make that fantasy reality, I actually, like, a time slot kind of fell in my lap at Columbia. So I think within, like, 4 months of us being friends, we were on the air in New York City in 1990. It was October of 1990.
Those are good times. Yeah.
2020 is actually the 30th anniversary of our radio show.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So when did you first understand the influence your show had, Bobbito?
It took some years, but our first audience was the incarcerated population of the Tri-State area. They were writing to us on a weekly basis, and part of our outreach was to, I mean, I worked at Def Jam. I was in promotions and marketing, so I knew how to do that well, and I applied everything that I was doing there to our show. So, you know, just giving people voice. And we gave that to a lot of artists, but we also gave that to our audience. And so we were reading letters from inmates, and they had never experienced that before. And so, you know, they became our evangelists and were telling people back home, like, you got to tune into these guys on Thursday. I mean, you know, aside from shouting them out, like, Stretch was curating the most insane amount of 4 hours that anyone in the Tri-State area and eventually the world could hear. I mean, we had Safe Harbor. You know, we were playing some album cuts that were not radio playable otherwise on community and commercial and college stations. We were bringing up guests. We weren't always doing station IDs at the top of the hour.
it was pretty loose.
Yeah, it was pretty loose. You know, I think the first couple of weeks we were trying to be like, okay, we're on radio. We had no training, but then like about a month or 2 months in, the floodgate opened and we kind of rewrote what a hip hop show on radio could be, just in terms of like open, like, or just lack of format. Mm-hmm. And the listeners loved it.
Sounds like you just went with your gut. Like you saw what the rules needed to be, and there's certain rules you got to adhere to, but other ones, they're rules. They're just there.
Yeah, I mean, the only rule we had was to give the station ID at least once an hour, and we didn't do that. So we really, I mean, the other rule was actually like have something being broadcasted. Sometimes we didn't even do that. There was one year, I stopped going to school. I mean, ironically, the thing that took me away from my studies was the school's radio station. I mean, because our platform became so recognized and it kind of helped our stars grow as mm-hmm. people in music. I had to make the choice, like, do I want to be a full-time student or do I want to pursue my passion in music? And that's ultimately what I did. You know, because we didn't know if we'd be allowed to continue to be on the air from year to year because I wasn't going to school, anytime someone from the station would show up, which was rare because this is at 1 a.m. to 5 a.m, but when they did, it was like, okay, like the parents are home, like we gotta behave. And I don't remember who the station manager was at the time, but he or she walked in and their presence just made me kind of have to recalibrate everything I was going to do as a DJ because I was going to play all these records that had foul language in them. And I felt like, okay, the station manager's here. I've got to behave. And the manager pulled me aside and I smelt liquor on his breath. So I think he had been at a dorm party or whatever. And I told him, I brought up the whole notion of clean radio edits, yada, yada, yada. And he said, oh, no. Play whatever you want. Go for it. So once we got that stamp from the brass, mm-hmm. it was no looking back. To play those records on the air and then have artists come up live and not have to self-censor was like a really big selling point in the show. That meant a lot to people just to know that there was a sense of freedom.
And authenticity.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. My guests are Stretch and Bobito. So you guys are on the other side with this new album. When you decided to put this project together, what approach did you want to take? What was your approach as producers?
So our goal with the album was to take records from our respective crates. And
virtual crates and real crates.
and reimagine them. Like if we were in the studio in 1972 when Babe Ruth was recording The Mexican, how would we have told the band to perform it? And that's what we did in 2019. And we recorded analog. We wanted to sort of create warm sound, a lot of low end, a lot of unplugged musicians. Each is, you know, tops of their class in their respective circles. And most of them are Latin jazz musicians. Play with Tower of Power, play with Santana, play with 10-time Grammy Award winner Eddie Palmieri. But they're all young in their 20s and 30s and grew up with hip-hop. So they just haven't been able to flex that muscle. And so we kind of like, similar to what we did in radio era, we just let the musicians loose and give them a platform to express themselves in a way that they've been yearning for, but not necessarily have been given the direction for.
And while the record's not a hip-hop album, but there's a certain sensibility. I mean, the you know, growing up in hip-hop, and when we're talking about hip-hop, we're not talking about mainstream rap. We're talking about a mentality that goes back to the 70s before there were rap records, where
so
hip-hop
well said.
DJs were mining any type of genre for that break. That's the hip-hop we're talking about. And so we've taken that mentality to approach these songs. The album is all the songs are reinterpretations of already existing mm-hmm. songs, and we knew that the potential for people to say, oh wait, those songs don't need to be remixed. I mean, we knew that's a risk we were taking, but I think we've really infused these songs with a perspective and with I think like a dance floor sensibility that will resonate with people. And
also taking chances too. I mean, for example, we redid the Chaka Khan dance floor classic, I Know You, I Love You, and added a bomba break to it. Now, most people don't even know what bomba is unless you're Puerto Rican, but it's an Afro-Boricua roots music, dates mm-hmm. back 200 years to the slave communities, you know, with the drums brought from West Africa. And, you know, it's survived. It's survived all these years, and it's still a thrill to hear it, and when we added it, it made sense.
Okay, well, let's listen to that version of the Chaka Khan song, I Know You, I Live. I wake up to the feeling each morning, go to bed to it each night.
What's Good with Stretch and Bobbito on NPR,
mm-hmm.
you played a Bomba record in one of our episodes.
Oh, and you lost your mind.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
It was like, that just went like right into my like cerebral cortex and lit me up. But you don't need to know about that.
No,
to enjoy
I mean,
the music.
Drums speak, you know, and we opened up our, in terms of our production style, we opened up a lot where, you know, you hear isolated drums, similar to like a DJ, like in a DJ's dream, he or she would imagine these records like, oh, Matt, I wish there were naked drums. Well, guess what? We're going to produce a record and give you naked drums. So that's it. That's
a real DJ mentality in the production. Can't help it.
My guests are Stretch and Bobbito. So Bam Bam, let's talk Bam Bam, festival song. It's one of the most sampled reggae clips ever. How did you want to approach a beat that so many people are aware of and has been used so often so that it, you know, it's almost, and I don't mean this in a negative, it's like cultural wallpaper, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was getting at before. It's like, do you really want to go there? I mean, it's... But we took it back almost to the beginning when
Toots and the
Maytals made sort of a, I don't know, it's a pretty unique record. It's not a ska record. It's not a rock steady record. Reggae didn't even exist yet when they recorded it in the mid 60s. It's more like a Mento record where the hand percussion is like up front and center. But you know, it's a foundational record, like everything else is on our record. So we decided to, you know, step up and take our best swing.
Well, let's take a lesson. This is Festival Song, Bam Bam.
Another record that, you know, it's another curveball. In the middle of it, it switches into a guaguancó.
And that, and say that again?
A guaguancó.
Because that's actually, you know, I would say most of the curveballs on this record are, feel seamless and you don't really have to kind of figure out what's going on. I got to say on that one, it's a little challenging. It's very complex rhythmically the way it comes in. And then when the main section comes back, I know, like, our singers have to look at Lucas, our music director, like, to count them in, because it's you lose track of the one pretty easily.
Right, but music should be challenging. You know, we're not making pop music with our album, so.
You know. How'd you put your band together, the M19s?
Well, Bob, in his role as a filmmaker, had gotten Eddie Palmieri, 10-time Grammy Award winner. Absolute legend to work.
You said his name incredibly well, Stretch. You've been practicing.
I'm a New Yorker. I you know.
He speaks New York. Fluent New York.
Right. You worked with him on a song for
Doing It in the Park.
For Doing It in the Park, right.
Pick
your
up
first
basketball
film.
NYC. Right. Yeah. He composed several songs for the score.
Eventually, you know, because the sessions with Eddie and Glasper,
Robert Glasper
went so well, you were basically asked if you thought about maybe recording an album with Uprising NYC, which is Eddie's label, and
the first thing I told him was like, I'd love to if I could do it with Stretch, and you know, Stretch has had some projects over the years where he's been like, I'd love to if I could do it with Bob. And, you know, we kind of like, we have that sort of shared love and shared, you know, like we work well together, right?
So that's how we got one person down. I'm the first. I'm the first in the band. But in terms of assembling the musicians, I really had to, you know, take a back seat to Bob because Bob is familiar with a lot of these players. And but, you know, the idea was we wanted men and women musicians that were, I mean, we wanted men and women, first of all. We wanted musicians that were young and kind of cool, because we knew that if everything goes according to plan, we're going to be on the road with these with this crew, and we don't want them to just sound great, look cool, but also we want to be able to be friends with these people, because you spend a lot of time together in the studio and then on the road.
Yeah, and it's already happened. Maimouna Youssef, she's a Grammy nominee. What?
I want to play that track next.
Oh, go for it.
Let you finish your sentence. Go ahead.
She's a Grammy nominee, formerly with the Roots in Common. She's a solo artist now, and we're really blessed to even have her on our album. The fact that she made time was kind of... She's the truth.
Bananas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Live?
You know, we've been... You know, we recorded with her. We rehearsed all that, and then we're on stage, and she starts doing her thing, and Bob and I look at each other, and it was the same look that he and I would have given each other back in the 90s when like Nas, Big L or Jay or was someone just smashing it, like, yo. Yeah. It was the exact same look we gave each other.
She took it like up 85
She just had like
notches.
Three extra gears. It was bonkers. One of our singers, Edson Sean, he was looking at her just making like the icky face.
It's so good, like, I can't believe it. Yeah.
And
the dang face.
Yeah. Edson Sean is one of three singers that Bob and I met on the subway. And it was the night after I had a gig, and just to kind of bring the party down, I played Sam Cooke, Change Is Gonna Come, at the end of the night, you know, just to make people sad. And
let them know they have to go.
And we're on the train going somewhere, maybe to
NPR.
And we hear that song being sung, like, you know, just a few feet away, and was it Edson Sean and Aaron
Maya?
It was Nakeba. That's right.
And then we added Aaron Maya.
And we approached them, got their information, and they're in the band.
That's such a good New York story.
Very crazy, New York.
Right? The way it should be, though, right? Yeah. Let's play this track, If You Really Love Me. We get to hear your interviewing skills as well at the top of this track.
Yeah. Me nervously talking to Stevie Wonder.
Let's take a listen.
Stevie, I think your music has been covered probably more than just about any other artist. Definitely top five all time. I'm just curious, and now I'm not inviting you to speak ill of anyone, but was there ever a time when you heard a cover and you were like, nah? I don't think so.
You know what? That's one thing I'll tell you. Never.
What?
Oh.
Meaning I'll never tell you who and what song.
No, I wasn't expecting you to actually tell me who.
That is from the new album, No Request, from Stretch and Bobito. Before I let you go, you mentioned at the top, Bobito, that it's the 30th anniversary of the radio show.
Yes, right? Our first broadcast was October 25th, 1990.
And our friendship.
So are you? I heard you're archiving the old show. Is that what's going on?
The show's,
can we mention that yet? I guess.
I mean,
yeah, might as well.
I heard somewhere.
If it doesn't happen, you know, it's not our fault. I've spent a lot of time over the last 15 years archiving our show, digitizing, you know, boxes and boxes of tapes, and I don't want to get into specifics, but yes, if everything goes according to plan, sometime this year, we will be releasing excerpts, as well as big chunks of our shows on all relevant digital platforms.
Well, not good.
And that's never happened before. I can't think for any, I mean, certainly not any hip hop show, but I don't.
What have you learned about this friendship, this relationship, while archiving the show? Something that's popped out at you about it?
That.
Wow.
That. We were very novice in our early years. I've heard Stretch critique his own DJing stuff that, yeah, I mean, only another DJ would realize, right?
Well, one thing that which is painfully clear in listening to the shows while digitizing them is how much we forget. I mean, it's like sometimes I'm listening to another person. Like, that's me talking. I said that. Wow.
And also how many songs we've forgotten too. I mean, there's just such a wealth of, there's a volume of incredible music that we both shared with our audience.
Yeah, I get hit up all the time. Yo, you played this version of this Jizza song that had a different piano loop. I need that. It's like, damn, I need that too. I don't know where that is.
Oh, that's constant. I mean, ever since we stopped being on the radio, it's like, you know, weekly, sometimes daily, like, what song did you play at 4:45 on April 22nd, 1990? I don't know. Half asleep. Here's a clip of it. I still don't know. Yeah, we were playing white label test pressings and demos back then. And yeah, it's, yeah. So, well, we hope to share it with the world. I think it'd be a good thing.
Knock wood on that one.
Yeah.
Name of the album is No Requests. We won't even talk about why that's cheeky. As DJs, No Requests.
Well, it's also there's meaning behind it. I mean, if people who know us from the 90s were to hear that we were making an album, they would expect us to have sampled
a rap record.
You know, yeah, like 10 songs with featured MCs, and that's not what we did though. So it's kind of like it's our statement that we did that then. We're never turning our back on that. Obviously, we're trying to share the archive of it, but we're not resting on our laurels for what that show did.
And it's not where we are right now, musically.
In 2020.
Yeah. My guests have been Stretch and Bobito. The name of the new album is No Requests. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is all of it. And you can catch Stretch and Bobito DJing a set live tonight on Instagram.